The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Marion McCune, US correspondent with the Business Post, and Cal Thomas, nationally syndicated newspaper columnist, are with us for our weekly spot on America. And Cal, has there ever been a duller Super Tuesday, the day when so many states decide who their nominees for the presidency will be?
Well, I don't know if it's dumber or not, but we've been doing this for a number of years, 15 states plus one territory voting today. Biden, of course, is a shoe-in because he has only the most minimal of opposition. Trump will probably get all of the Republican delegates. It will still leave him short. He'll get the remaining, I think, in next week's primary elections in several other states. But this is the way we do things, for better or for worse. I've said on this program before, I think we need a reformation in the way we elect our leaders. Otherwise, we're going to get more of these kinds. So it is the way it is, and people can get out and vote and vote for whom they wish.
It's no fun this year, though, is it, Marion? It is desperately dull.
Oh, it's deadly dull. It's just appalling. I think this is my fifth election I've covered, and usually there is suspense and there's, you know, it's like a grand national sort of steeplechase where, you know, a whole bunch of people go into Super Tuesday and half them fall and, you know, a couple linger on or whatever. But this is just, and the thing is, it's not just that it's a dull primary, it's leading to an election that of two candidates that nobody really wants. So it's all very odd. Nikki Haley is still hanging in there. Now, you know, she's getting a lot of flack from some Republicans, but I think there's also a grudging admiration for her tenacity and her saying, well, I'm staying in. She's got about 43 delegates at the moment. Trump has about 276. One of them needs 12, 15. Guess who that's going to be? I think that she might pick up a few delegates in Vermont, Virginia, places like that, Colorado, Minnesota, maybe. But Trump is going to romp home because the big states are winner takes all, like California and Texas. So he won't, as Cal said, he won't get everything he needs. He won't get 1,215 votes tonight, but he will get them in the next couple of weeks. You know, he is going to be the candidate unless he gets hit by a meteor or something in the meantime.
Okay, but Cal, of course, there was also a significant decision in the US Supreme Court yesterday. Colorado was not allowed to block Trump from the ballot of primary candidates for the Republican Party. Now, he didn't need Colorado, but how significant is it, that intervention, do you think, from the Supreme Court?
Well, it is significant, Matt, because a number of states have been ready to take Trump off of the primary ballot. And the ruling, although the justices, the liberal and the conservative wings, had different things to say about it, nevertheless, it was unanimous. That's very unusual for the Supreme Court. The Colorado Secretary of State decided on her own that Trump was guilty of insurrection, even though that's never been proven in a court of law, and therefore he violated a provision of the Constitution and could be taken off. The court ruled that you can't do that in federal elections. States can do what they want in state and local elections, but they can't do it in a federal election. And I think that's the significance of the ruling.
What do you make of it, Marion?
Yeah, you know, I think that probably the unanimous sort of broad brush decision on that part is correct in that, you know, but Section 3 doesn't say that. I mean, it's so vague. So I suppose you have to put in some boundaries there. So I think it makes sense because otherwise you would have, it would be like basically the abortion chaos in America. Don't you have different states doing different things? You can have one state that just decides we don't like this guy, we're going to throw him off. But it is pinned to insurrection. But I think that in going much further, and a really muddy and badly written decision, I thought, where they said, it's, you know, Congress has to do something. And then you had the four women on the bench, Amy Coney Barrett, who came back and said, you've gone too far in this. All you had to do was say states can't get involved in this. And then they seemed to wade in and say that basically Trump couldn't be. They made it a lot harder, basically, for an insurrectionist not to be able to run for president. And I've no idea why they did that. And if you read the dissenting judgment on that part, written by Sonia Sotomayor, it is furious. It's such an angry, scathing attack on the majority who made this ruling. And then Amy Coney Barrett comes in and says, I dissent, but please keep your voices down, ladies, in a way that is so infuriating in itself that it actually made my blood boil. So I think that the Supreme Court have gone where they didn't need to go, and they've made a mess in the process, even though I think that the unanimous thing where they said no states can't wade into this is probably correct.
Okay, we have, if Super Tuesday is dull, what's the State of the Union address, Cal, from Joe Biden likely to be on Thursday? And first of all, can you just explain to us why the State of the Union address is regarded as so important in American politics?
Well, it's become more political than really the State of the Union. The one line that is required is for the president to say that the State of the Union is sound. So somewhere in a speech that will probably last close to an hour with all the applause lines and the popping up and down of members of Congress will be that phrase. But advance information on what's in the speech. One of the lines supposedly that the president's going to use is, "Whose side are you on?" Now, I'm old enough to remember back in the 1950s when that phrase was used by the right wing to attack liberals, and the right saw a communist behind every tree, and that led to the Joseph McCarthy era as well. So I just think that's a very, very funny phrase. The ratings have been down for the State of the Union consistently over a number of years, especially for Biden. I think a lot of people will tune in tomorrow night and the ratings may go up just to see if he can finish the speech.
Which is all I was going to get to. Marion, using the phrase, whose side are you on, is a bit like doing a Matty McGrath, who are you loyal to, which is something that you might be aware of in becoming a meme here on this side of the Atlantic. But is it a fair point that this is divisive? Or is it necessary to accuse Trump of being a Putin patsy, of being against democratic freedoms, and of potentially imposing higher health costs?
Well, you know what? It might be divisive, but the country is divided. I mean, there's no denying that. The country is so bitterly divided that it's a sort of unprecedented. So I think that it would be a dereliction of Biden's duty as president if he didn't point out, look, on one side, you have a threat to democracy. On one side, you have a president who said he will be a dictator for a day, who's promised to gut all the federal institutions, you know, and leaving aside things that now seem lesserly important, like healthcare. But if, you know, a candidate who does side with Putin, who sides with dictators. So I think it's really important to point those out. But I think, as you and Cal just said, will people be watching? Will they tune in for the hour? I don't think so.
I'm sorry, Cal's question is more important. Will Joe Biden be able to carry a speech for an hour?
Well, you know, last year, I don't know, I think he has, I think he's become, he's deteriorated noticeably physically, and I would say he's become slower in his responses in the last year. Last year, he was pretty nimble on his feet. There was one point where he was talking about Social Security and whatever, and the Republicans started booing him and heckling him. That's another ugly thing that's crept in. There used to be respect for a president giving a State of the Union speech, and now they deliberately try and throw Biden in particular off his game. But he came back pretty nimbly and said, "Oh, you're with me, so great," and he kind of painted them into a corner. So he did pretty well last year. I think he will. Look, a lot of this, you know, yes, he is 81, but I think a lot of this is kind of overstated and getting a bit tedious.
Cal, could it be that, you know, if you actually examine Joe Biden's record and public appearances, he's been making gaffes since the 1990s. He's been accused of having memory loss since he was in his 50s. That actually the Joe Biden we're observing now is no different to the Joe Biden when he was vice president and in all the years before that.
Well, I think, I'm not a doctor, but I think a lot of that has to do with the brain aneurysms and the operations that he had some years ago. But getting back just for a moment to the advance word that we're getting on what's in the State of the Union, he talks about, you know, the rich and a fair share of taxes and cheaper drugs and better health care. We've heard this for years. Why didn't Clinton, Obama, and now Biden, who promised all of this stuff, deliver on it? It's the same old playbook that has been in place since Franklin Roosevelt. Corporations are evil. People are not paying enough taxes. They never talk about the spending. We have a $34 trillion debt. The interest on it is over $800 billion a year, and nobody can cut a penny from spending.
Okay, and just tell us a little bit about what's in your nationally syndicated column this week about politicians excelling at lying, Cal.
Well, this is one of the few things in Washington that is equal opportunity, Matt. Politicians don't tell the truth. I used to have a lecture circuit laugh line where I said, I'm happy to be here tonight from Washington, D.C., where the only politicians with convictions are in prison. This goes, the column, the essence of it is about the Hunter Biden closed-door testimony before a couple of House committees, and how he now, after denying that he knew anything about the so-called big guy, said it was, in fact, his father, the vice president, and the former vice president, when he was listening in on phone calls with his business associates. And then he had claimed that that his father was never involved in any of his business dealings. But then, according to the published transcript of those hearings, we find that Hunter said that, and some others have said, that Biden was, in fact, in a lot of these dinners and meetings at very upscale restaurant in Washington, D.C. So, you know, I think all these people should not be given cognitive tests. They should be given lie detector tests.
Yeah, but then would that apply to Jared Kushner and Donald Trump, given that whatever Hunter Biden may or may not have done, we know that having worked as an envoy in the Middle East, Jared Kushner, after Trump stepped down from power, was given a $2 billion investment fund by the Saudis.
Yeah, I'd like to know more about that myself. There's a lot of stuff going on in the Middle East. It goes back a number of administrations, Republicans and Democrats. A lot of that Saudi and other Middle East money has gone to various politicians of both parties. There's a lot of stuff going on. You know, there's a journalist in America some years ago, Michael Kinsley was his name. He said the big scandal in Washington is not what's illegal, it's what's legal.
Well, to finish with you, Marion McCohen, all the stuff about the Biden crime family, which is what some propagandists try to push forward, I mean, how does that compare with the scale of what has been done by the Trump crime empire?
Well, you know, honestly, I think for starters, it's sort of apples and oranges. We've seen Donald Trump has been convicted of fraud in his own company. We saw Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump went to work as senior White House advisors. Ivanka Trump received patents from China the same day as the Chinese president met with Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago. We saw that Jared Kushner walked away with his $2 billion check from the Saudis. And, you know, all of these things to me, it's just outrageous. Now, I think that Hunter Biden had no business being on the board of Burisma. I think that Joe Biden should have taken a much tougher line with his son when he was vice president and said, don't even think about it. You know, we don't even want the appearance of impropriety. I don't believe that Joe Biden was involved in any of his businesses. This so-called witness they had, Alex Smirnoff, turned out to be, he's behind bars now, you know, for lying to the FBI. So I think that in terms of that, I don't think that Hunter Biden necessarily behaved well. I think he had no business being involved in Ukraine, but I think that in terms of comparison, that they're two totally different things.
Okay,
and
we got to leave it there.
Investigations into the Hunter, into the Kushners.
Thank you very much, Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.